Wendy Knight and Jeff Bertolite, the chair of the Urban Renewal Council, and we have our full council here also scattered around. You guys can maybe raise your hands. So if you don't know your council people, get to know them now. That you can ask questions later here, but they're here to listen, as am I. And what we want to do first is to, you know, let you know this is a neighborhood meeting, so your questions are mostly in charge of this meeting. We are trying to gather information, and Derek, our community development director, is going to go over some basics. Some of you folks have seen this before. It'll be some slide presentations, and I thank you. Would you like to hold questions or ask them as you present them?
How about we hold them, because I'll go through this pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, okay. And then also, you know, hold the questions and be sure, you know, ask them. And then focus tonight is basically going to be items that have, there's something that's on your mind, and he'll go over what we're doing for our current budget year. However, as the budget goes forward, we haven't, there's an ability to reestablish some priorities, because the funds that are left are a little bit more limited than in the past. As you can imagine, we've done a lot of work here with marine science and all the improvements in this area. So the next focus is going to be what is it that can be done, and your feelings on how to create the most benefit. Urban renewal itself is basically a process that is to enhance the area. In some areas, it's formed to correct blight. We don't have blight necessarily, but we have areas that are underfunded, the utilities aren't in, and things like this, so that development can happen. And I will get into some questions on about funding, and also we have our finance director here, David Marshall, in the back. He can answer some questions too. So I'll let Derek take over and give a little presentation.
Thanks, Jeff. Again, yeah, my name is Derek Tokos. I'm the city's community development director. As Councilor Bertolite mentioned, this is town hall meeting, and this is really primary an opportunity for you to ask questions and engage with the city council. So I'm going to be brief and run through some slides to provide a little bit of context for the conversation, really. If I can get this to work, right? This button. There we go. So we had for an agenda is just a brief overview of the South Beach Urban Renewal Plan. For those of you who might not be kind of familiar with what an urban renewal plan is and what the mechanics of it are. Talk a little bit about the status of our urban renewal projects, those that have been completed, and then those that are currently budgeted. Talk a little bit about funding for future projects, and then just kind of, you know, other topics of interest folks may have, you can certainly bring those up as part of this meeting as well. This image here depicts the boundary of the Urban Renewal District. As you can see, it's not all of South Beach. It wraps around the airport, so it doesn't include the airport property proper. And it doesn't include one of our larger developments, Wilder, and the community college, which are outside the Urban Renewal boundary. 40th Street, the intersection of 40th Street, is inside of it. We'll talk a little bit about that, as that is obviously the primary access to those developments. But the plan was extended in 2008, so I'll just be talking about stuff that's happened since 2008, not the prior history of the South Beach plan. But in 2008, as part of that extension, three project phases were developed, the 2009 to 2012, which is the current project phase, the next phase, which is 2013 to 2016, and then the last phase, which is 2017 to 2020. At the 2020, the end of the 2020 is the limit for starting new projects. So the district goes into what we call a debt retirement phase at that point. And debt is to be retired under the plan by 2027. The district assumes 7.1% average annual growth rate. Projects are financed with debt. And I'll kind of walk through how that's done. And then they're repaid with a tax increment, with the revenue we get from a tax increment. $38.75 million is the maximum indebtedness, and we're somewhere a little over $20 million in terms of debt right now. So there is certainly capacity to take on additional debt. This is a little graph of boxes to show how tax increment financing works. That's how urban renewal plans actually are effective. So essentially you have your total tax rate, and that when you put in place an urban renewal district, the rates are frozen for some of the different taxing entities, such as the county and the schools and stuff like that. And so every increment above that, what they call frozen base, is basically the revenue that the district has, the urban renewal district has. And when you accrue enough of that, you can go out and borrow money against that increment. And that's where you come up with a pot of funds to actually do projects. And then you pay off those borrowed funds over a period of years with your tax increment. And at the end of the day, eventually, when all your projects are done, the concept with urban renewal is that the property values within the district will have increased enough that when you close down the district and release that base, all of those taxing entities are going to be making more in the way of tax revenue. So that's how it's attractive to the school district or the county or these other taxing entities who have to, you know, deal with a certified frozen base for a number of years. So. So for planned phase one projects, this list here is really those that have either been completed or well along their way to be completed. The first project that was completed under the plan after it had been extended in 2008 was intersection work at 40th and 101. The $500,000 represents the contribution from the Urban Renewal Agency. That intersection improvement was not done solely by Urban Renewal. It was a partnership between the Urban Renewal Agency and the developer, Will Emery, who did the Wilder development to make that happen. Ash Street, which is the connection by the PUD, which would be, where is it? I'm not even sure it's on here.
Let's go.
It's extended beyond where it would be, because that's 50th, I think, here. 40th goes on up the hill here, so it's that small connection. There's a small connection right in this area by the Public Utility District. It's a gravel road right now. That's going to be constructed as a paved roadway with bike lanes. Jury's out right now whether or not we're going to be able to squeeze in sidewalks, but we're trying to. The Public Works Department is designing that at present, and that is fully budgeted and slated for construction spring of next year. There's a Coho Brandt plan. $70,000 is budgeted for that. That's in this area, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about that. We haven't started work on that yet for a couple of reasons. One, we're still working with ODOT on some larger transportation issues in South Beach that have to do with Highway 101 corridor. And the OMSI development is going to provide an opportunity to address some issues over here with respect to Abalone, and they just closed on that property. And but in terms of the scope of that plan, I certainly appreciate thoughts folks have in terms of issues you'd like to see addressed in the Coho Brandt area, because we haven't mapped out that full scope yet. Marine Science Drive, that work's all been done. That was the big project. There was a lot of press on that. That was the almost $2.2 million of urban renewal dollars were applied to that. The overall project was close to $3.3 million. We got well over about $1.1 million from the state. And that covered all of the work on Marine Science Drive up here, the realignment of all of those intersections, construction of the multi-use path, all of the new lighting, the trail underneath the bridge, all of that is part of that project. Highway 101, water and sewer line extensions from 40th to 50th. That's that run here on 101. That's fully budgeted, that's being designed, and that's slated for construction in 2012. And then there was an open space acquisition that the Urban Renewal Agency did in 2010, purchasing some properties by that gully there at 30th. Right next to the South Beach State Park. There was some residential property there. That's a natural gully area. And As it turns out, that'll dovetail nicely with plans that OMSI's has, because they intend to preserve the balance of that gully area as well. We'll be working with them on how to make that happen. So that's a big positive. Other budgeted projects, we have the tsunami evacuation route improvements budget of about $200,000, and that's for the hill right there at the base of the bridge. That hill is the designated evacuation area for much of the South Beach area. Certainly if we have a nearshore earthquake of any size and you have 15 to 30 minutes to get to an evacuation location, that's really the only place that's close enough to go. We've done some geotechnical work on that, so we've already started that project to a point, and that's work has shown that this is an appropriate location so far. We just don't have a final report on that yet. As soon as we get a final report, we'll make that public. That's encouraging. We don't have enough funds to do the whole project, but we have enough funds to offer an attractive match. And so we've submitted one grant application already to the state of Oregon. We'll be submitting another to FEMA. And we hope to have word on those by January of next year. The other project is what we call an estuary trail easement acquisition and trail reconstruct, and that was over here. The estuary trail, as I think most of you are probably aware, has been washed out in several areas, would need to be reconstructed. That project's on hold for now. It does require a minor plan amendment, which is not a real big deal. My sense is from the Urban Renewal Agency is that and they're here and they can talk about that, is that they're looking for ways to better leverage that so that the Urban Renewal Agency isn't carrying the load in terms of funding. And so maybe an opportunity to go with a smaller dollar figure and use that as a match for some sort of trails grant or something of that nature. So that one's on hold for now. These are some additional phase one projects that haven't been funded at this point. And we don't have the funds to accomplish all of those projects. And that's not uncommon with urban renewal plans. You tend to have more projects than you do funds to actually do. Actual construction of whatever comes out of the COHO grant plan is part of that. It's $850,000 was what the estimate was. Primarily road right-of-way acquisition, there's another $150,000 there. Trail easement acquisition, wetland mitigation banking, which would be basically setting up a program that makes it easier for folks to develop on certain wetlands, provided mitigation happens on others. So it sets up kind of a program for that. And then there's some additional funds left over for park and open space acquisition in this plan phase. These can get tough to read. I tried to squeeze them all up here, but these are all of the phase two projects. The biggest is construction of an intersection at 35th Street at 101, and that would also involve relocating the traffic signal from 32nd to 35th, and so 32nd would become a right-in, right-out for the side streets on the 101, and that would improve traffic flow on Highway 101 as part of the negotiations we have with ODOT to get a more favorable, what they call alternative mobility standard, but basically a more favorable standard in terms of the amount of congestion that's allowed on the highway so that more properties in South Beach can develop. Sewer extension to the airport is in there at $1 million. Strategic site acquisition funds are programmed in phase two, can be used in a variety of different ways for economic development, community facilities, or affordable housing. That's about $850,000. Parks and open space acquisition and development, another $550,000. Right-of-way acquisition, $450,000. Some funds for burying, Envision for burying underground utilities at $300,000. Improving existing rights-of-way and more funds for wetland mitigation making. The list gets even longer with phase three. And the reason in part for this is that as the district gets more mature, the borrowing capacity goes up. So when we get to phase three, we'll be able to borrow more dollars and theoretically, and then we'll be able to do more projects. a fairly major stormwater projects program for phase three in the southern portion of the plan area. Some more road work, this at 50th and 101. Existing right-of-way improvements could be any of a variety of things under the plan. It could be sidewalk improvements. It could be just actually paving existing gravel streets. I mean, it could be a number of different things within an existing right-of-way. Waterline improvements include a new 12-inch line that would go under the bay, some sewer improvements in the Henderson Creek area, some public amenities dollars, open space acquisitions fall there, public art, street trees, trails, sidewalk improvements, some additional funds for tsunami enhancements, burying underground utilities, things of that nature. There's also some funds programmed in for facade enhancements, so that might be a grant to existing businesses to help them, you know, improve the street appeal of their structures. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but there is a separate, there's a process we've been going through for some time and expect to wrap up before the end of this fiscal year on Highway 101 and planning for. So some of these improvements that I just went through, such as that signal relocation, are key elements of the plan we're putting together with ODOT that will allow more properties in South Beach that are commercial industrial zone to develop to their full potential. This went backwards, that's wild. There we go. All right, this gets to the funding aspect of it. At this juncture, we conservatively anticipate that about $450,000 is remaining for phase one projects, that first list that I showed you. We anticipate that we'll be able to go back out for additional borrowing in the 2014-2015 timeframe. The estimated amount for that's a little over $5 million. And then, again, we'd be able to go out in the 2019-2020 time frame. And as you can see, the estimated amount there goes up even further to about a little over $7 million. And I'm going to spend a lot of time. This one probably makes your eyes glaze over. But it's part of the urban renewal plan, and it really talks about, you know, here's what our urban renewal rev increment is for each year, our debt service, remaining uncommitted revenues. This talks about our phase one debt service retirement. You'll see programmed in here when we start to do phase two debt service retirement, and then again phase three debt service retirement. So it's all programmed out. David Marshall can talk a little bit about this, but I think the point is that we don't have enough funds to do all of the phase one projects, and we're probably not going to have enough funds to do all of the phase two and phase three projects. So of the projects that are listed and we've covered, we certainly want to get a good sense of what the relative community priorities are for those as we go along. For more information, for the details of what I just talked about, you can find that as part of the Urban Renewal Plan. It's posted on our website. That's the web address. And it's not an overly lengthy document. It's about 24 pages, and it's on our website, and it's got all of the details and the full project lists and all of that if you're interested in that. Okay, folks, that's all I had. Jeff,
anybody have any questions for Derek?
Derek, I did have a question on the TSP.
Yeah.
Are there particular ones on TSP, particular projects that are going to rely on urban renewal money? I remember from the last open house, there was a lot of things that they were talking about could be a partnership with the developer and urban renewal, mm-hmm. but some of them seem to be fairly reliant on the city and urban renewal to do something. So have those been added to your list, or are these
there? To my knowledge, there's nothing that's not on that list. There's nothing new that would be tagged to urban renewal. There are projects on the list that the 35th Street would be an example. The 50th Street would be another example of projects that are part of the conversation we're having with ODOT that are already programmed in. So if it's not already on the list, there's nothing knew that ODOT's going to be saying, city, you should be adding this additional work and trying to find funding for it through urban renewal.
I guess I'm kind of wondering about the should versus must. So there's nothing that's a must.
Correct.
I think that was part of Oregon Department of Transportation's idea of them not funding is about what it amounts to. They were looking for other sources other than their department, and that's where you guys come in to perhaps lobby a different method. But that was what they were, just of what I found, they said that most of it was going to be done through either urban renewal city or private dollars. And then we've been working with them, so I don't know what the latest has been.
Their posture is softening somewhat. You know, as you might imagine, Oregon Department of Transportation is tight on cash, and but they are basically indicating at this juncture that the state, it's reasonably likely that funding will be available for the last 10 years of the transportation system plan work, which is down the road a ways and doesn't align with our urban renewal plan very well. But really, the two big projects that are left here that relate to our conversation with ODOT is the work at 35th Street and the work at 50th.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think that, you have a question.
There was a mention at some point about abalone and that ODOT had some kind of stake in abalone.
Well, they currently actually technically own abalone, the road proper that exists today. Is owned by the state. That's the only stake they have. They'd like to get rid of it, and they transferred the actual maintenance responsibilities to the county, and we're talking to the county about whether or not the city should actually be maintaining that, not the county. That's something I'm having a conversation with the county attorney about. But outside of that, ODOT doesn't have a particular stake in abalone.
Not in the flat of abalone that's not there yet.
Correct. They have no stake in the portion that has not been constructed yet.
Is the OMSI project, is that accessible with Abalone Street or by Abalone Street?
That is accessible from Abalone, yes.
So if they go forward with that project, would they pay for the improvements?
They would be responsible for a certain amount of improvement on Abalone, yes.
I think what we want to focus on here is probably not details of how people are going to be paying for things as... But we don't, if they're taking it out of our urban renewal dollars, which we have shown here to be $450,000 left to spend, if they're coming after urban renewal dollars, that's certainly an item. And I think that if we can focus on what items that you feel are going to give the most bang for the buck, and we don't have that small amount of money until they go out for bonding, those are items I think you need to hear about. And as you can find, you know, as you can see that it's not going to go very far unless you have grants or some matching dollars. So who would like to kick off ideas?
Do we need to go back to the list of phase one projects?
Sure, if you can find it.
Yeah.
Yes, David.
The other issue I think we brought up at the last meeting was with the $450,000 left, the options were out of the community prioritized projects that the money could go towards, or if we wanted to defer that $450,000 and add it to the additional bonding capacity money that will be coming in 2014-15. So that would be basically no projects until 14-15, but then we could add that money to the money that's coming in for bonding capacity. And I think that was kind of left open for more community input that particular option.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. However, it's probably a little concept that would be a little difficult for most folks. But I think if we get the idea, the items on the plate here that you want to talk about, and then if they can wait till another three or four more years, that'd be great. Then you maybe could add it and use that. But he's talking about using that lump sum and then taking portions of that lump sum out to help pay for a bond. So that would be how you'd use that money. But
there's a factor of maybe 10 to 1. So we don't know yet. Derek was going to check because for every, let's say, $100,000 in money you have coming in revenue, that might have a tenfold capability for $1 million worth of projects if you're going to amortize it over a period of time. So there's kind of a 10-to-1 or 8-to-1 ratio between.
Right, but that would mean you'd have to divide 450 by sure. 10. So it'd be $45,000 or less after you get a 20-year bond, it might be 20 years. So it would may or may not add
sure.
that much money. But that's another way of financing things. So anyhow, who would like to start off? We've got a lot of people from different areas, and go ahead. Your name, please?
David Mitchell.
Okay,
I live on Brandt.
Right.
Would you provide a little more detail on the first bullet up there, the Coho Brandt construction?
The Urban Renewal Plan has two projects for Coho Brandt. It has first a Coho Brandt plan, which is the $70,000 that's currently budgeted, to figure out what types of improvements and work should be done in that neighborhood. And then it programmed in $850,000 of urban renewal could be invested towards the construction of whatever comes out of that plan. That's as I understand it. The urban renewal plan does not define in detail what the Coho Brandt plan needs to look like, what its scope is, what its boundaries are. It doesn't really cover that. So I was actually hoping that you know, as part of this meeting, if folks have thoughts on what that should be, this would be a good time to raise them.
Now, is there a project for Coho drainage? Does that come under that, or is
drainage?
That
drainage would be part of that, yes.
So if you felt that, for example, drainage is, and generally, from an engineering background, it is the most important thing first off, that would be your first priority. Then you could establish your grades and go from there. So if that's something you think maybe is the most...
Well, there's some people here that live closer to Coho than I do, and I think they are impacted by the inadequate drainage in that area.
So maybe that's something we can have. We have a good engineering department, and then we can also maybe take some of those funds that are available, and we have an engineer of record for the city, and maybe the renewal can also go to that direction and maybe... You know, get a little bit of a thumbnail idea of the extent and the cost of those improvements, what they feel should be done first. That's a good to bring that up. Anybody else in the Coho Brandt? Joyce?
So, Jeff, are you looking for instance, we have the $70,000 that's for Coho Brandt neighborhood planning, correct?
Yes,
okay,
that's accurate.
So I'm wondering exactly, you know, if we're going to spend the $70,000 for Coho Brandt planning, then what is the scope of that, and how will that work in with the things that we're talking about now that people in the neighborhood...
Well, generally how design projects work is they are the professionals that come in and say, here are the items that you need to do. Your first, perhaps the first one would be your drainage situation. The second would be maybe establish road beds. The other thing might, you know, then maybe the sidewalks. And they would do a little list, and you go from, you know, bottom up, generally, and then they'll have a scope of project. They might say, you know what, here's our plan. It's going to cost you more than $850,000, but then that's when you have to look and see, can we do it? We don't have the money to do it currently now, but that's where grant processes could come into play. So that's what generally we would hope the person that is going to do the design project would come up with some ideas for us.
Would that not be a time for the people that would be affected by that to have their input in?
Well, now's the time
the
to do that.
Yeah,
now's the time. You have some things you want to raise, and Elliot lives there too, and what do you think?
Well, I live on the corner of 29th and Coho, so it's going to impact me dramatically. There's no road there right now, so I'm in opposition to building a road there, to be straight up honest. I think we should pave the roads that we have already before we spend more money on another road that we're not going to have paved. Why should we do that? We already have a road in there that's not paved.
You mean the one along the bluff? Is that the would it be? I'm not sure what you mean by the road.
The extension of Coho.
Coho's not paved, you know, the itself right now.
Yeah,
and 29th is not paved.
Yeah, right. So what's your...
My concern is where Coho stops right now is obviously there's a city right away there that could become more Coho. I own a piece of property on that corner. I prefer not to have traffic in front of my house.
Sure.
I prefer the drainage to be better, that's for sure.
All right.
Years ago, we had a big drainage issue there. City came out and brought some backhoes and what have you and dug it out, and it's been a lot better ever since. Uh-huh. But if it gets overgrown again, then I'm sure we'll pay back to that drainage.
Okay, and let's go with you first. Your name?
My name's Bob Cunningham. Okay. I'm from the bike shop. I live on the corner. I bought a place a couple years ago on the corner of 29th and Grant. The triplex right there on the corner. So that's where I sit. And I would love to see that place paved. I mean, going up and down that road. And it looks like at the end where Grant terminates to Southwest 30th, you have that backside paved. Then you have, on your conceptual plan, you guys have on your 2008 concept that has Grant paved and then down to your place paved also. So I would love to see all that area being paved out there, of course, the drainage.
Be number one for, okay. And Mark?
Well, what I'm hearing the questions being asked is who, how, and when is this planning going to be put together?
This year, right?
And who's
we don't know who yet.
Who's going to be involved, and how are you going to go about including the neighbors in that planning process? And do you have an idea how you want to put that plan together between now and July 1st?
Well, I have an idea of how we would put a plan together.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what process you're going to use? Because I think that's what people want to know, is how are they going to plug themselves into that process?
Certainly. Anytime we do a planning effort, there will be substantial public outreach. So really what I would do to get the planning effort started is that, you know, I would be putting together a scope of work to bring in some consulting services to help us develop that plan. That scope of work would define generally what the plan area is and what the different types of issues we would expect to be explored. So drainage, mapping out the street network, identifying lighting needs, you know, utilities and undergrounding and what it would take to do that. Things of that nature we could put into a scope of work. And then we would have a process or time frame within which we would want to get the work done. And that would also include public outreach and those out you know, to help develop what that concept should look like. So it's not just this is how it's going to be done. This is going to be. These are some different options for street treatment in terms of pavement widths, in terms of how we do, say, sidewalks or paths, or how we handle the drainage. You know, do we try to do structural solutions, or do we try to do more of managing you know, stormwater on individual properties and limiting the amount of structures that we have to put in. Those are conversations that would have to happen with the community. So that's how I would envision the process working. So I guess from my perspective, I was hoping if there are particular issues in the Coho Brant area that you think are particularly relevant, this would be great information for me to help me define a scope so I have a better understanding of what all we should be tackling at this juncture.
So are you going to allow public input before you send the scope off at some point too, like put the scope of work together and have people get a chance to review that so that all their issues are included?
I think if you were to announce it at meetings and whatnot, other than a general mailing, Mark, I'm not sure how you would. It's always open prior to this. This is what this meeting is kind of about
right
now.
Yeah.
You know, my sense is I'd probably set it up such that, you know, I would take an initial stab at that and then have an initial kickoff meeting where that scope could be tweaked or adjusted. I'd probably try to tackle it that way.
Because, I mean, you don't want to spend the money doing the plan that doesn't really fit what people are hoping to have happen.
Exactly.
Or have just another plan on the books.
Yeah.
Chuck?
With that Coho Brant plan, if it were executed, the properties that are already developed, their tax base basically would stay the same. And one thought that I have on that project over there is if we did spend $850,000 to improve that area, what does that get us in terms of the tax increment financing benefit? The existing properties that are there are developed and they're tax-based and set. They can go up 3% per year, but it can't go up more. So if you spend that much money in that area, what are the properties available in that area that are actually going to benefit the district's revenue stream? And it would have to be a new project and it would have to be a residential project or a commercial project in that area.
Would you suggest, to get your point there, but to keep things rolling, that he maybe also not just look at an engineer, but perhaps a economic advisor to help identify items that would be, most benefit then?
I'm questioning whether spending money there is the best place to spend money. Maybe we should spend it someplace where there could be commercial development that takes place that actually feeds into the economic or to the urban renewal increment financing vehicle more directly, rather than benefit properties that are already set in terms of their tax value by and large.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a business. Looking at it from a business standpoint, with that as the parameter.
Right.
No, I certainly follow where you're coming from, and that's a policy choice, really, of the Urban Renewal Agency. As you go through and look at phases, as the agency looks at remaining phase one projects, and then we're actually starting to now look into phase two, considering the timing in terms of what the first relative project should be there. What I'm hearing you say, tell me if I'm getting it wrong, the Urban Renewal Agency should be thinking about, in terms of identifying as a highest priority, those projects that are going to result or realize the most increase in property values, because that's going to, for say phase three, generate even more funds for projects down the road. Did I get it right?
That's exactly the point.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else in the Coho area?
So
we'll go jump to another one, because you're on the other side of the town. Let's go ahead and go to the change course thing.
When the city puts in a paves the street, is there a minimum standard? Do you have to go to a full-blown curved sidewalk, or can you just pave it?
Well, that's another policy choice, I think.
Well,
in the past, it has been.
Fits into what I've heard from different people is they don't want a Cadillac; they want something.
I don't want sidewalks and curbs.
Well, that's what the plan would define, because right now, a standard street section is defined in our subdivision regulations, and you're looking at a 36-foot wide paved surface with sidewalks on both sides. Now, we did a refinement plan for the Marine Science Drive area and Ferry Slip, and came up with an alternate street standard there. We can certainly come up with an alternate street standard in Coho Brandt if that's what, as part of that planning process. That would be a piece of it. What should our streets look like? Should we have standard sidewalks or not?
We had a meeting several years ago, the meeting at the South Beach Community Center, where most of the people that are here from the Coho Brandt area were there, or at least aware, and there was a discussion about that, and the neighborhood, there was discussion about what was wanted. Just like Elliot just said, it's just like pave it, and that was all, and that's what came out of that. So, and one other thing about, for instance, it's not only Brandt, but 29th Street also is riddled with properties that are in the right of way are already there, and so to.
Let me hold you there for a second, because I don't. Okay, I'm hoping, not envisioning this is just a design for Coho and Brandt. It's the area. So, yeah, we'll take care of 29th, 30th, and whatever streets are over there. I think in the overall design in certain areas, I don't know if you'll have collector streets or not, but each street that has more traffic may be a little wider, a different section. And we've already identified quite a few of those in different plans we've had. So. Let's go jump over to maybe John, the other side of the
on the other side of the highway, and it's sort of the same general question. It's because I haven't been through all the, I haven't kept that close of track, but I don't know how you decided on the Coho Brandt construction, which is fine. We start there, but all these houses are old, and so I think that all the places that you go, you're gonna have right-of-way problems because they're built too close for a 36 street and a sidewalk. It's always going to be a problem. I think that's what I'm hearing here.
So what your suggestion is?
I'm not sure, but I think that's a big problem in building it in the year.
It could be that with new mapping, we do have more capability now in our engineering department, so that they can probably with overlays and GIS and systems like that, they can actually identify where property lines are. And I think that's it's an important issue, because it's as much as 15 feet is off over in that area. So
I'm nasty as there.
Yes, go ahead, Mark.
Do we have an inventory of developed and underdeveloped lands right now in the urban renewal district?
Of developed and undeveloped?
We have an inventory of that. So, you know, kind of going back to Chuck's question, is where are the lands that we suspect will be redeveloped or totally undeveloped?
We have it on the residential side. We're going to be developing it on the commercial and industrial side as part of the economic opportunity analysis that we've started.
So taking a look at that might be a really good way to try to move forward with phase two and three, and saying this is where we're going to get the most bang for our urban renewal bucks, because we'll get more return out of that.
Yes, your name?
I'm Phyllis.
Phyllis, okay.
I live on 29th Street.
All right.
It's gone over my head. Somehow I missed out on this OMSI thing. Could you explain what it is, and is it going to impact our streets? Are they going to be driving through our neighborhood then?
Apparently not.
What is it?
No. It's that area that was formerly, it's Blood Green property, but it's the back half, about 16 acres, maybe, I'm
that
not sure.
Slide on that slide will show you.
Oh, is it
aerial shot?
Aerial shot. Well, anyhow, it's the area that's all sand right now, and they would probably access it, I would think, through 32nd, 30th.
Abilene.
Abilene.
32nd. Do they have roads to access through our neighborhood?
Do you see this? I'm running the cursor on. You see this property back here that the cursor is circulating on? That's that vacant property back there. That's the piece. The access would be through an extension of Abilene. You know how Abilene right now, there's that branch off to the cemetery, and then it stops? Well, envision that turn south, going straight south. That would be the access down to the site. So, no, there wouldn't be folks directed through the residential area. Yeah, sure.
Your name?
My name is Matt Brown. I'm actually here representing OMSI.
Yeah.
And so I'd be happy to talk to anyone after the meeting if you have any questions on that.
Oh, good. Thank
but
you.
Just the general idea, though, is that this is envisioned as a youth camp. And so it's not an attraction where people are coming to and from the property on a daily basis. It's going to be a fairly lightly developed camp really focused on the coastal environment. So be happy to talk to anyone after the meeting if you want some more details on that.
That'd be great. I'm glad to have you show up. Okay, anybody next?
Yeah, back to the Brant Coho ideas. I'm being a member, and I see a fellow member of the Bike Ped Committee here. I would like to see us involved in some of that planning so we could come up with a bike ped plan for that area. The area that I don't want a road to go through, I think would be a great place for a bike path to go through and tie into the existing bike path that has been built there under the bridge and such. So I think that would be a good place to come talk to us at one of our meetings.
That'd be a good idea. Yeah, we do have some nice committees that
long. That's what we do, so we'd love to be involved in it.
Sure. Let's see, we've done neighborhoods. There's one more. Chuck, you want to talk about, or John or whoever else, maybe on this side, no one's really talked much about.
Well, there's a group of us on the east side of 101 in the Barrelhead area behind Hoover's going out towards Idaho Point. That neighborhood, who have been coming to the meetings pretty religiously over the last 15 years, neighborhood plans, etc. And there are a lot of substandard streets in that neighborhood that could benefit by paving as well.
And drainage,
although some of the drainage was taken care of with this 4B plan that they did. A lot of the streets over there, as John mentioned, are difficult to do a full-blown build out. However, some paving and a sidewalk on one side is certainly possible. And one thing about our neighborhood is it has the Ferry Slip Road main street that runs by there. It's a very busy street. And that is an area adjacent to that neighborhood that could also get some attention when you imagine that Ash Street will be completed here in a year or so. And it will be a full-blown street. It'll stop about by Barrelhead. I mean, it'll hit Ferry Slip at Barrelhead, and then between that point and 32nd Street, there's an area where the street is not developed at all. in terms of any infrastructure, just like a county road.
So you'd like to see maybe a little bit of a planning that
area? The idea would be to consider spending some money to do a minor street improvement on Ferry Slip Road between Ash and 32nd so that you don't have two well-defined finished streets with sidewalks in a blighted area in between that has absolutely no pedestrian or bicycle facilities.
All right.
And that could be accomplished low-tech without a full street build-out. And we've talked about different ways of doing that. And there's also, besides that, the neighborhood streets, many of those could have aprons paved up into the gravel street so the gravel doesn't slide down onto 35th Street, as an example. If you drive out to Idaho Point, it's a paved street, but there's gravel streets that feed into it. Each one of those gravel streets features gravel that comes on to 35th. So the engineering department is now starting to pave aprons up into gravel streets where they are adjacent to paved streets to mitigate that. They're doing it on 8th Street in Newport.
So
there's some minor improvements, yeah. Street improvements.
So you think maybe a good thing to do then is to task either a consultant or engineering department on identifying list of various or items within a certain neighborhoods that you're, let's say, aprons, drainage, and that. So we have a list to work from, so the Urban Renewal Agency knows, and the people here know, okay, you've got $450,000, or you have to wait, one of the two, what's going to happen. And the same thing might apply. Maybe the person that's doing that bang for the buck might say, well, you know what, this is going to save you either a lot of money or it's going to enhance vacant lots that maybe somebody wouldn't otherwise build on. So that's a good another list of things. Hopefully Peggy's taking notes. We'll have all that down. And anybody else on the east side there?
On 35th, it's come up before that's pretty, it's a busy street and there's no shoulder. So I think it's ditched. Is it ditched on
both sides.
And that's an issue. I don't know when we talk about the 35th Street improvement, which might be phase two, but
well, this issue here, where the one and two and three, we can modify, don't get stuck in the phase areas. But you're thinking.
I've been thinking for bike and pedestrian, and we'll start thinking about tsunami response. I don't know what the evacuation route is for John.
It's more like a.
It's called CYA.
There is no
one. You can't go south from our house.
Yeah,
you
have to go. We can't either.
You're going to go to the college by hook or crook there, David.
Jeff, before the internet, I'd like to get Chuck's perspective on a couple things, because before the city council took over urban renewal responsibilities several years ago, Chuck served on the Urban Renewal Agency along with a lot of community members for a very long time. And I'm curious, Chuck, during that discussion you had before, you were basically, the council took over your responsibilities when you were on Urban Renewal. Did you guys have discussions about projects benefiting properties that will increase the property value, which will then increase the tax increment value for more projects? I'm curious.
Yeah.
What happened during those discussions, because the council is fairly new to this. Over the past 3 years, you, Rob Thompson, Roger Snelling, a whole bunch of other folks, Mary Lou Yep, were on that for a long time, and I'm just curious what your perspectives were before you actually no longer had that responsibility.
Well, I think that's what brought up the question about the bang for buck concept, and we did have discussions about when we do urban renewal projects, does it benefit, who does it benefit, and is it in the tax base such that it will cause that increment tax financing benefit? And a lot of the projects here down on the peninsula are great projects. The $3 million that's spent, you know, doing the sidewalks and whatnot along Reed Science Drive are great projects, but they don't directly affect tax-based properties. And so every time you make an improvement with urban renewal, you have the potential of helping grease the skids for a commercial development or residential development that's adjacent to it. So every time you spend money, it's like, well, if we spend this money, are we going to throw off an atmosphere that's going to create somebody actually developing something so that the urban renewal engine is fueled? And that was the way that we looked at a lot of the projects.
So you looked at two things. Did you look at the issue of projects benefiting a specific property and increasing the tax value on that, as well as some indirect effects, which would mean if you benefit a property
indirectly, other properties might kind of benefit from that and actually develop themselves, so there would be direct and indirect effects?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at 40th Street going up to the college, as an example, the Urban Renewal Agency spent $1.125 million for the lower part of the construction of 40th Street going up to the hospital, up to the college. The benefit to the district there is some of those properties at the lower end, Rich Richmond's property down at the bottom, the Tryon property, the Stoker property that are right there on 101 and 40th. Those are all properties that, as a result of that project, have the potential of being developed in a pretty positive way. So that was money well spent from that standpoint, even though the direct beneficiary of that street was the college and William Henry's development, which happened to be out of the district and don't put a dime in the district's pocket. So we didn't directly, we're not directly benefiting from Embry's development, even though we spent, you know, $1 million+ to help build the street. So there was the spin-off, future development was part of what we thought about. But yeah, the concept of what do we get after we do it was pretty well entrenched, and that's how we looked at things.
Good. Thanks, Chuck.
Even though, another question, when you establish, it takes a certain criteria in order to establish an urban renewal district, and I believe one of those criteria is that you have to prove that the area is blighted to a certain extent. So it seems like when you're trying to make your improvements in that area, that you should be directing those improvements toward that, those blighted areas, and they aren't, don't necessarily coincide with bang for buck philosophy.
Well, they directly coincide with that, because when you have a situation, if you don't have access to a property, then it's blighted by the fact that you don't have access to the property. So blighted is kind of a term that you use. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, looks horrible or is in distress. It simply means that it has some disadvantaged situation.
Yeah, like infrastructure, for
right.
Example. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, blighted is, you know, has a connotation that doesn't directly apply the way
that it's not ramshackle houses.
Blight is the used word in the statutes that creates urban renewal districts and the authority for cities to implement it. And blighted is a very broadly defined term, and it means a lot of different things depending on what you're doing. So the word blighted in the specific sense that you're talking about, Lon, isn't the way it's interpreted under the statute for purposes of urban renewal.
So that helps give you a broader scope here, so we're not tied down to one identifiable item that everybody might have an idea what blighted might be. But, okay, you had some items there. We haven't heard from the 101 sector. Bill, you're one of them, but is anybody else there on the corridor?
Our biggest concern, first, drainage.
Drainage.
Keeping water away from things. And access. We've got a turn lane now, probably all the way to...
Well, I know that according to the transportation plan, they would love to have, five lanes? Or six, but we're going to get the best we can do for right now is probably 3-2 with one in the middle, and hopefully we'll get. We don't have enough room for an additional lanes. It needs to be 110 feet or so. It's only 80 feet currently, so there's issues there. But you're right. I think that the big meeting that was brought up before this too was the drainage, and I've talked to somebody else, Vern Wiles, said the same thing. Drainage is the number one issue for him, as well as with. Evidently, both sides neighborhoods here, so that's important. Anything else that there you can think of?
No, I think
just
a couple things.
Okay, John.
About a third of the phase one project money was on things like easements, a park, acquisition of wetlands, or something. Could you say something a little more about that? First time you chose the site for a park, is there a park related plans?
Well, I think what you have items that you, yeah. If you felt you had properties and you wanted to go after a park, in this case, one did come up and it was identified that was that canyon, and that Urban Renewal Agency agreed that they went out for a grant, couldn't get one, but felt a strong enough need there to acquire that property, and as it turns out, it works out very well with OMSI. So that is one. We don't. If we say park, basketball hoop type park, I don't think.
No, I saw the slide. Whatever it said there.
Okay, it was a more broadly defined idea of what park is as compared to maybe recreational. It's also open space or park space. I don't think right. I mean, I'm not.
There's funding identified in several plan phases for open space acquisition or actual conventional park acquisition and development. The plan does not identify a specific location for where that should happen, and that's something the Urban Renewal Agency struggled with a little bit in terms of, okay, what should those sites look like? Where should those investments be made? And so I think there's still work to do to figure out exactly, as we move into future phases, when more of that funding is made available, how that might be used.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of important, I think, too, there has been, and hopefully there's still a core of South Beach people that have gone to these meetings for 15 years, and I know it's discouraging, but if you can hold it together and you say, you know, here is what our neighborhood is saying that would really benefit our neighborhood, that'd be the opportunity to come and present an option to, let's say, the Urban Renewal Agency or whoever's helped planning the area. And we are, you know, every time we have a meeting, or if you can't make the meeting, certainly write something down and send it in to us. Generally, I've been going to these urban renewal meetings now for 22 years, and generally most everything gets accomplished by people that bring something up. It rarely is the case that the Urban Renewal Agency is the one that initiates. So this is very important for the community input. Jenny?
On the open space, something that Elliot said, there's been a lot of work done by the Bike and Pedestrian Committee as well as in the transportation plan with kind of drawing stuff out. So can some of that, some of the funds that are designated for right-of-way also or for open space be thought of as how you would extend bike paths?
Certainly.
As kind of a moving park?
Well, here's an example you might.
Well, it tends to be more how we recreate down yeah. here. There's a lot of bicycling that I know goes out of this place during the day, and I know that Chuck has looked at various options too.
Well, I'm trying to champion there's an airport trail all the way to South Beach, and so that's an opportunity there that could be met by some urban renewal money, some other funds also. But that's why I want to get this information out here, and if anybody has, you know, items, I know Joyce has been very vocal about her.
We had, can I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
There was a questionnaire also that went along with some of the planning for the South Beach Urban Renewal Plan about what was your major interest areas, and maybe we could do something like that and just mail it to people and get an idea of the property owners. Industrial, commercial, and residential.
Well, it's potential. Again, that's what kind of open houses are for too. But we're certainly open for any input we can get. And maybe there's a way to do a Survey Monkey, have it on our website or something that they can answer. Generally, it's hard. It's difficult. People have to show up, and if they aren't a little bit educated about what's going on, it's difficult for them to actually come up with ideas. Mark.
Just a quick comment about open space. We don't really have anything on the books right now that defines what an open space is, or any kind of a policy, or any kind of parameters to follow when it comes to purchasing or setting aside open space. That's something we need to do,
right,
as a city, because it ties back into what's happening here. So it's something that has to happen.
Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Or sooner rather than later, if open space is important.
Well, there's also open space, but view sheds. We don't ever cover your view sheds up like the ocean and bays and vistas. That's a very expensive option to have that happen. It's happened in Lincoln City. They close off their end of their streets there, you know, and then you can't see the ocean anymore because there's houses all along the bluff. So I don't want that to happen.
I like to see more undergrounding of utilities, especially around major evacuation rounds. So Ferry Slip, but Chuck brought up about trying to polish up that one section. Another possibility would be some undergrounding if that's going to be an evacuation round.
Well, I think there you'd have to establish probably priorities. I talked with the PUD representative just yesterday, and he said, as an example, in the Coho Brant neighborhood, you're talking millions.
Right.
And so, but perhaps on items like Ferry Slip, that's your gateways. Those are
a lot of cities, if you ever look at a picture of Europe, you don't see any telephone lines. But, you know, they've been there for more years than we have. And so those are items that we could probably, if we didn't, we underground it all the way out to here, and that was after it was demanded.
Well, it was a $500,000 to do the undergrounding on Marine Science Drive in Pacific. So that's what it cost to do the undergrounding. So
I know it's not cheap, but if we can prioritize certain
areas, certainly. Yeah, that might be a good priority list to come up with. I thank you. Yeah, George, you're kind of happy here, I'm sure. Has it been? How has it affected? Or what do you hear comment wise from now all these improvements?
Well, we get a lot of positive feedback from it overall. I mean, all of the people that come in here, you know, I think it would be fair to call before the project that was done out here. I think it'd be fair to call this blighted area. It was pretty grim. It was kind of quasi-industrial. There were no sidewalks. And people didn't walk that much around here. And if you go out now at lunchtime in this area and you look at people walking on these trails, they're getting a lot of use. The tourists who come down here, the people who come to the visitor center, you get a lot of positive comments about the roundabout, about the general look down here. And I think it creates some positive attitude about the city to a lot of the visitors that are coming down here. And I think it's really a good thing.
Good thing.
I really applaud the city for what's been done down here.
I've heard good,
a big difference
good comments too, and the huge benefit of putting that trail in front of the under the bridge, not in front of those condos, and going out. Sooner or later, we can maybe upgrade the a trail out to the jetty, which is another recreational area. So let's see what have we got. The one-on-one covered this area. What items? What are we missing here? That
let's talk about all the way up here.
I'm sorry?
Let's talk about all the way up.
Okay, let's do that. At the airport, we don't have this on the map here. I wish someday we do. And this is the green area. The airport. Well, here's the airport. Okay. So this area, by the way, is all zoned industrial. And it does so because the airplanes take off and over, and you don't want to have your noise incompatible with residential. A lot of this has been already identified and cleared, and so it's basically available for purchase soon. The idea there being they would have to put in water and sewer all the way out to pretty much the end of the airport to service all this, probably 100 acres of industrial land. Hopefully we can tie in right there, and this is higher than that ground, so it'd go back up to 50th here, and that would make this area viable for different types. And what would be nice about that particular area, let's say, is that folks that have a small business, a glass shop or a wood shop or any kind of little tiny thing, they're able to buy a 2,000 or 3,000 foot industrial space, and that's going to be their retirement, because you don't sell your business, you are the business, and the only thing you have left to sell when you retire is a shop. So that's just what a lot of folks like to do, is to do buy real estate, work it, and then in the end, they may be able to sell their business, or if they can expand, that'd be great. They're looking for investments. So it would be really enhance our local livability by having folks have jobs and a site to do their business. Any other questions about, I mean, with regard to that, you guys understand what we're talking about?
Briefly on that. I think something to keep in mind, the current budgeted project to extend water and sewer line from 40th to 50th is a big step. That's gonna position properties that are currently outside the city that are industrial zoned in the county to be annexed and to be developed more to their potential, and to make some of those sites, you know, the redevelopment of those properties can certainly generate, some of the investments you're talking about.
Right.
I mean, that potential is there. And so, you know, I talked about it early, 40th to 50th, water and sewer. Water and sewer stuff isn't always a real attractive thing to talk about, but it means a lot to those properties being able to be developed to their potential. So I just thought I'd mention
that. When he talks about the potential, meaning currently what's built out there now is, like Bill has a site out there, the only thing he can build on there and just was fortunate enough was storage. And the minute you go with employees or something else, then the fire flow goes up, which they didn't have enough of, and then they don't need restrooms and the sewer wasn't available. So the, on the other side of the highway, it isn't yours, but those are items now. If it goes out to 50th, you've got more area. So yeah, that's important. That's why you just see in a sort of a low dollar investments in just in storage. You don't have, you've got Newport Industrial Park, which is something that has a little more taxable amounts out there. But thank you for that. That's a good point. But then that other land that is now at the end of our urban renewal is vacant. And that's where your big increment could be when it's, when you're basically getting only forest value. The minute it turns into something, then you have more of a chance to have bondability. And then you're going to talk about, okay, we have more bondability. Maybe the streets then, that items that probably aren't going to enhance the tax base as rapidly as covering up, you know, or building industrial space could have, then your other enhancements would be available for you. Yes?
I was at the port meeting the other night, and they were talking about moving Mount Noah out to the airport and filling in an area to improve it. Do you know where at the airport that is, or did you?
Right near the fire station, or in the.
Can you show us on that map, or is that?
A little bit. I don't know exactly, but I think it's pretty much there was some interest out here
between the fire station and the Quonset Hut.
Yeah, the Quonset Hut. No one knows where that is because they aren't allowed on the property. But
it's right where this area here.
There's an area that's got low and highs.
Right where the road comes down off the north end of the airport.
So it's on that side of the airport, and
between the highway and the airstrip.
Airstrip, right. And that there was a potential, still is, that we would like to talk the Air Museum of Tillamook here, and that if we could enhance the ability to have them be able to build without waiting.
So that would be an area where that site could go for the museum?
Yes.
That's what I was thinking. I hope it was going to a place that was going to improve the value of the property, because that's
right.
Good property around the airport.
Yeah, there's lots of property on the airport, but if it isn't buildable, then the difficulty there, of course, we will still have to get water. We actually need water and sewer out there. That's another difficult spot.
Thank you.
Is that property in the district? That wouldn't be in the district.
No, it isn't in the district currently. So, but it's in the city limits, but it's not urban real. Of course, the city doesn't pay taxes either.
Does anybody know why that land clear out east of the airport was that long strip down the east of the airport? Is that actually viable?
It's
part of the urban renewal district.
Well, that was to tie in Wolf Tree. That was so.
Oh, okay.
That was, they had to have a contiguous boundary.
Is that strip out there really viable for development?
No, they traded that off for being able to develop on the their current area. So that's a little trade-off there. But Wolf Tree is still available. It's for sale. So anybody wants to buy it. Any other? You haven't had a chance to speak. Where are you guys located?
No, we're on 35th, and I guess our biggest concern is if you're cutting off of 101 and coming through 35th, we already have 50 mile an hour cars going out there, and that's certainly going to increase that. So what are you going to do about slowing down the traffic going out to Idaho Point direction?
Well, the generally traffic calming devices are similar. Now, the only thing that's happening now is you've got two dangerous ditches on both sides, and people go as fast as they want to. But the idea would be not to make it look like it's extremely wide. I think that by covering up some of those ditches and putting in culverts and maybe a bike lane or sidewalk on one side, if you were still to maintain the trees, and I don't know if we want to get involved with humps and stuff like that. But that's more of another issue, more of a detail later on, but it's an important point. And even though Idaho Point or those areas might not be in urban renewal, but it's certainly a real good walking path, running, biking to get out there, and that's enhances the whole area.
We would like to see something maybe worked on Chestnut Street.
Chestnut Street's an interesting street. Personally, I'd close off on one way. There's no need to have Chestnut cut, be the cut across. There really isn't. You know, people aren't that much of a hurry.
Well, that's there is for Chuck and us. We got traffic going right there. No,
it could go one way. Choke down the one way.
Choke down the one way would really slow down a lot of things. And they've done that in a lot of cities where they put in these cross through streets, and they finally put in little dead ends, and it enhanced the neighborhoods tremendously. People got around. Okay, who hasn't had a chance to? You're over in that side, and you're there. Okay, and you're over here. You're by the shop on Ferry Slip,
right? And I'm kind of in agreement with Chuck on Ferry Slip. If you do ash and you've done this end of, you know, that's going to be kind of a no man's land in the center. And I've noticed that in the summer, we get a lot of people from the hotels walking down Ferry Slip, and they're in the gravel or on the street. You know, there's no
other choice.
There's no place for them to be.
Well, I think they'd probably like to take a walk if they had an avenue down 35th and walk out to Idaho Point and back.
Absolutely.
It's a nice, quiet neighborhood too. So those are items, and same thing with you guys on Coho Grand. I mean, if you can get across and do your walks and safely go under other areas, that's where the value you can make a good case perhaps for. There isn't that all built out? There's a lot of vacant lots still on both sides, or underdeveloped, and that would be a good case for making for. Enhancing the value, the tax base, and then going from there. The other thing, I was covering one more thing, I guess, and that's what's the feeling here also on a design overlay enhancement, let's say, for the South Beach area? Now, we're not going to dictate color, but you know, the Nye Beach has a certain look they made, and it's become very popular, and it's actually increased that value tremendously. Currently, there is no overriding theme or anything in South Beach. It goes along with the rest of the town, so you could pretty much have anything go up next to you, and you guys are building some nice homes, and I mean, virtually a trailer park could go up next to you, you know. And so those are items that if you felt you needed maybe an overlay design element, that would be something that's available.
Well, it's something that we try to do. We tried to get started 20 years ago, I guess, or whatever it was, right. 15 years ago, something. I think that's a good idea.
Do I hear any objections to something like that? Or
that'd be a good idea.
I'm always leery of having the government tell people what they can do on their land. However, I don't want them doing next to my land. A touchy subject.
Well, it is, and generally when you do the residential type properties are generally less regulated always than commercial on most all plans because of just that element. I don't see that. Well, they would have a theme as do Nye Beach has, basically, you know, windows and
right.
theme, and they could take out of that box, but. Perhaps
I think we'd have a hard time telling everybody you have to have two-story with residential on the top and commercial on the bottom. And
yeah, I don't think it'd go in that direction. But that would be something that's just something that Derek needs to hear, too.
I think it's a good idea, though. That area just the south end of the bridge where we come up around, and there's a big lawn area there. My wife, being a master gardener, and a bunch of others in the room, think, you know, that'd be a nice place for a Welcome to South Beach area. And identify it as an area because it doesn't have to be like Nye Beach, I suppose. But it seemed if there could be some kind of a theme or some kind of a thing, Welcome to South Beach with surfboard
landscape.
There's some elements like that, and actually, Agate Beach has a sign element. You know, you can't put up plastic signs with bulbs inside and glowing in the nighttime. They don't like you to do that. So there's other options, and certainly along 101, I mean, if 101 has the huge opportunity to not look like the rest of 101.
Yeah.
There's nothing there now,
and
virtually all of 101 will be redeveloped. There isn't going to be a thing there that's going to be left in 10 years.
Would you agree with that? I mean, there might be a couple of things, but pretty much the whole, when it gets developed, there won't be items.
It's long, a lot of years down the road.
Well, then again, too, the issue is, I always make the point, if people want to make money somewhere, they can make it anywhere. But if you have availability of land and good design features and all these things in line, they can make it here first instead of going someplace else. It's plenty of blocks. They don't want to go and have regulations.
I just wanted to point out that an overlay zone, and this is very true in Night Beach, it started at the grassroots. So if you have a bunch of people that are interested in doing that, they take that concept of the city and then it happens. Yes. I don't know that it could possibly work from the top down.
No, the hard part is to get it to work from bottom. I mean, you can make it work up to, as in Night Beach, it was at least a 6 or 8 year struggle to get it approved by the city, even though the local people wanted it. So those are items. So, but the nice part is that you guys are somewhat in favor of something like, I don't know, Janet's worked from Chuck and John and Joyce, and there's been a lot of folks there. So anything else that we're not covering? You, council? People, you have any questions that you need to have answered?
I just put in a word for the improvement of Ferris Slip between 32nd and Ash, as was discussed. And I'm looking at it from the standpoint of tsunami evacuation, because that's a main route. And especially if we can get Ash, sidewalks on Ash, we put in, I guess that's still up in the air. But we do need to have that spiffied up a bit, or it will help a lot if we get that spiffied up. So
just cover the ditches would be a huge improvement.
It's something so that when we have people going down there.
Yeah.
Okay. It is kind of an hourglass thing with the good on two ends, and the middle is a problem.
Okay. Mark spoke, and then Law, and then David. Yeah. Dean?
Okay. The only other thing I would add would be to have some kind of a pathway or connection for the folks that live out along Idaho Point Road to get to the community college. Straight towards the community college area, since that's going to be a designated evacuation site for tsunami as well. It's kind of half and half of some of those people, whether they would go to the evacuation, say, Haven Hill by the bridge, or go to the community college, but they don't have a quick, easy way to get there at this point without coming back down into the tsunami hazard area and going back up.
Yeah, so
the only other area that I would say would be something we should look at and consider, and also would be a good bicycle and pedestrian or hiking pathway connection to the community college and to Wilder, because as Wilder develops, hopefully more and more of those people who are going to utilize the trails and systems to get to work, because they're going to be working in South Beach.
Well, there was a trail system that Chuck maybe was going to mention there that it kind of bombed a little bit.
Right.
But one landowner.
Get back together with
him. You guys could ever lobby Mr. Yeck, it would be really important. But that was one area that needs to happen.
Or Chestnut, or go straight on or something, somehow, or pedestrian bicycle. Other than Ash Street, because Ash Street is down at the bottom. It's not, it's counterintuitive to walk down to get back up again. When you're trying to get out of the way of a wave.
Yes. Yeah, there's a little roadway in the back up there. You have to go climb the hill, but that's a hike, you know, to get back there.
Direction. Okay. Better to be alive.
Yes. Anybody else? Joyce?
Well, as long as we're talking about evacuation, I just want to bring up the 30th Street, the vacated 30th Street between Abalone and Brant Street. Derek, is that anything happening in relationship to that? We've discussed it before, and I know you were talking about what was going to happen on the Bonnet Bridge property as affecting that.
Maybe if you can talk with that gentleman here after the meeting, you guys can get together and see what opportunities there are to do that. That'd be great. Anybody else have any more questions? Well, I don't want to keep you later, but I mean, I want to certainly cover everything.
I'm asking real quick. I think Derek has made it kind of clear to us that he's looking to 30th to be rededicated and replatted and some kind of a connection with that.
That'd be great.
So we'll be looking at that.
And that would hug the cemetery and kind of wind its.
Yeah.
That'd be a straight shot. It'd help out a lot of those folks, like in her neighborhood, just to go straight instead of zigzag through a bunch of streets. David?
Jeff, I'm just curious with the audience members here. Did everyone hear about this just through the typical notice that's in the paper on the website? Because I'm just thinking that if we're going to make some additional decisions at some point, policy or otherwise, I at least as a baseline, like have folks that have showed up tonight to get specific notice that's happened. So if we can, you know, I've done this at other meetings in other capacities, but if you have a sign-in sheet with people's emails addressed, at least we could have an email list that is a separate list in addition to the regular public notice, which is basically what is typically done on more specific issues. So I'm just letting folks know if we could, Derek, I know we don't have a list tonight, but it'd be nice if we can get everyone's email and make sure that when any further decisions happen with respect to this discussion tonight, they get specific notice.
I got in addition to the
general. Yeah, we sent direct mail notice out to everybody.
You got that? Okay.
Did everyone
get direct email notice then? Who's here tonight?
I think you got a good point there. Unless if you want to have a piece of paper, you can write your email and contact number, or you don't have your email, you know, your address, something, so that when items are going to be discussed or we'd like to have input, we can, you know, mass mail, email that out at least, because it gets to be expensive to mail it out by property owners.
From a cost standpoint, that's a good idea, because it's more effective and quick to get it out by email. And those folks that don't have email, then we can use mail notice, but at least we can not just reduce costs, but get the message out quicker and more efficiently and build on that email list as more people show up.
Great. And then perhaps if this reworked the neighborhood committee, that would be another item that it could be. Somebody could be more in charge there, and they can talk to their neighbors, because most of this is done by word of mouth, I think. Yes?
You also collected a lot of this information on names and addresses.
Maybe you could use it just to add to that list. That'd be nice. Thank you.
Jeff, we're sending a list around.
Okay. Who else? You have any things you want to cover planning-wise? I mean, what is it you didn't hear, what would you like to hear more of?
I guess I would just emphasize that, as was mentioned earlier, as we're ramping down phase one, you know, we have a smaller pot of money and we don't have, you know, and we have a longer list of projects. And so for the next fiscal year, the Urban Renewal Agency is going to be meeting. This was kind of an introduction, so you have a sense of where things stand and what some of the remaining projects could be, and then what some of the other projects in phases two and three are that could be shuffled around a little bit. But as we move into the next budget, I would anticipate pulling together some options for the Urban Renewal Agency, and I'm certain that they would be looking for your feedback on those options or other issues as a budget's pulled together. Because again, we're talking about, you know, fewer resources, at least in the next couple of years. You know, how should those resources be expended? So stay tuned. There'll be more to come on that note. So that's all I'd add.
Would you also like to see, I know everybody's presented some ideas, maybe we can coalesce some of these items, and then other email you have, we can put that synopsis of what came out of it, and maybe that way we get some feedback. I said we had another meeting prior to this a couple months ago, and some people came up with some of their ideas also, and they're not here tonight. I know it's a lot of folks. Different. Thank you all for coming out of different areas, and I think people have different, a lot of time constraints and all. So if we can keep the message going, yeah, that'd be very helpful. I know it's hard to plan in the dark, and you know, you can give you a lot of good information on what can happen and what type of things can you know come about. And Chuck's point about we only have the, you know, this much money, what we do for the bang for the buck. Perhaps we would look at there are professionals that actually tell you, you know, this is what we kind of have an intuitive sense of what we can do, but maybe we need to look at somebody that says that's verifiable, that if you can do this, you're probably going to get more for it. So anything else?
So Jeff said people can find out what happened at the last meeting and from this meeting just by reading the minutes, which are archived and on the said is there available at any time.
Yeah, and even we maybe one more step for just besides minutes, we could maybe have a quick summary next time. If let's say we have another meeting here in just a few more months or whatever it is, so we maybe could review those minutes, and so we can identify that there's a process going on. So that's a good point, but a lot of folks don't know where to look for minutes, and that'd be helpful to know. Well, I think that's all we can do for tonight. Yes, one more.
Could we revisit Brandt one more time? I live at the corner of 28th and Brandt, and when I come out on 28th Street and I want to get on to Brandt, I look to my left, I can't see traffic coming because of the high bank that comes right down to the edge of the road. And that's a section that's also not wide enough for two vehicles to pass.
28th or Brandt?
Same time. Between 28th and 29th.
Okay.
A Brandt is not wide enough for two vehicles in that section. But when I come out on 28th onto Brandt and I look to my left, Brandt is kind of at an angle coming down that way and that high bank, and I almost have to pull out into the traffic to
my property
to see if I'm clear or not, and Hal can back me up on that.
Yeah, it's a difficult subject, I imagine, because if you were to cut off that corner, what happens to your property?
That's street right away.
Oh, it is street right away.
It is street right away. Oh. That needs to be brought back on the front there, because the right away, it's a 60-foot right away, and the street there is about less than 30 feet, and it's all on one side. So from that bank back to the property line is 20 feet.
Okay. Well, I mean, our road department has the equipment to do that. I mean, it's just sand, so I could probably move it. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well, it shouldn't take much money to trim that bank back a little bit, and maybe throw some gravel in there so that
sight distance.
But most of the residents in there obey the whatever the speed limit is. But we get traffic in there that they don't see the no outlet sign, they don't see the slow sign, they think they're going to get to the beach. And they'll come through there, and then coming out of there, they're in a hurry.
Right.
And there's time there are people traveling at a pretty high speed coming out of Brandt. Yeah.
You're saying there is a no outlet sign?
Yeah, but nobody sees it.
Okay.
And there's no speed limit sign, it just says slow.
Yeah. Well, the speed limit in those neighborhoods is always, you're supposed to go. They probably won't.
But it's an unsafe condition. I walk my dogs every day, and I walk through that area, and I have to stop and bring them in when anytime vehicles are coming through there, I have to get out of the way.
Well, a lot of times we don't hear about it, we don't know about it, so that's good to bring it up. Anybody else? Okay, we'll adjourn the meeting then. Thank you very much for showing up.
You guys did a nice job. I think you ought to be complimented.
Thank you.
Thank you all.